Doug Wright. Doug Wright.
Interrupting everything to cover breaking news.
You'll hear it first on KSL News Radio.
I'm so pleased that Senator Orrin Hatch could not only join us on the program today, but join us here in studio. Senator, welcome. It's good to have you here at KSL.
Happy to be with you, and Merry Christmas to all of you and everybody out there listening.
Thank you so much. We were running through the lists of things that we'd love to talk about with you today, and boy, I don't even know where to start. But
there are a lot of things.
But I did see something from your office about seven principles for comprehensive tax reform. And yeah. You know, Senator, you and I have talked taxes. I don't know how many times, and I can remember when Senator Bob Bennett was running for the Senate, which is now what 22 years ago.
Yeah.
And I can remember him reaching into his coat pocket and pulling out the postcard and said, "This should be our tax form. It should just basically, I made this much. And here's what I'm going to pay." And I look at all the efforts, and you've been part of some of them in 1986 to reform our tax code. I remember Patrick Leahy, if I remember correctly, had the big stack of papers there. And then he added the stack of the reforms. And are we ever, in your opinion, Senator, and could this perhaps be your legacy, to finally straighten this mess out so the average person could actually do their taxes and understand what they're doing?
Well, I hope so. Most people have to hire, a tax preparer. And it's pretty pathetic when you have to go that far. One of the goals that we have is simplicity, to try and make it so simple. We have 70,000 pages in the tax code. Nobody fully understands it. And any two tax preparers will prepare it differently on any complex tax return. It's pathetic. Plus, it's denigrative to our economy, to our country. One of the things we want to get with true tax reform is growth. And the tax code is stifling growth in this country. It's not just the simplicity, although that's certainly one of the first things you want to try and accomplish, is get it so that the average person really doesn't have to spend a lot of time filling out their tax returns. Unfortunately, in this country, we're reaching a point where almost half of the people don't pay taxes.
Right.
And that being the case, and many of them shouldn't have to. But there's some who probably should. But it's getting to the point where it's not only burdensome, it's almost impossible to comply with.
How can you back out of this boondoggle, since there are so many special interests involved? There's always a goodie in there for somebody. Somebody's getting a break, or there's a loophole, or there is a pet deduction that is buried in there. How do you back out?
Well, it's important that we grab the ball the right way, and that we try to balance the interests. I had a number of groups in yesterday in the office who are very concerned about changes to the particular sections that help their businesses to grow.
Mm-hmm.
And, Chairman Camp over in the House, who was chairman of the Ways and Means Committee, who I met with regularly as the Republican leader on the Finance Committee, he gradually phase that benefit out. That's not a loophole. A loophole is when it's something that's unanticipated that gives people a benefit that was never anticipated to be given them. A lot of these are given to try and help the economy, help people move ahead, but we're way out of bounds on tax reform. And when we do understand what to do, like the R&D tax reform, the research and development tax credit, we haven't been able to make that permanent, although we did our very best this last year. That's one where companies have to be able to rely on the code, and we're always having to catch up because it's not a permanent provision. So a lot of companies don't avail themselves of it. Who would benefit from it? And there are countless provisions like that need to be amended or need to be taken out of the code. We're in the process right now, and I've got some of the. I have the best tax team ever in Congress working with me, but it is so complex, it's just mind-boggling. And then you've got to explain it to all the senators, and then on the committee, and then you got to explain it to all the senators in the Senate, and then you got to sell the House. Hopefully we'll work together. Paul Ryan over there is a true policy wonk. He's very, very good, ran for vice president with Mitt. And he's got an awful lot on the ball, and I enjoy working with him. So we've already met. We're going to see what we can do, but it's not simple. It's very, very difficult.
Do you ever foresee the day, because there have been notable Americans, Steve Forbes, others, who have advocated everything from a national consumption tax, national sales tax,
right,
to a flat tax with zip, nada, no deductions at all. And others, of course, are very concerned about the charitable donation and keeping
right,
the American dream of owning a home alive. Are we ever going to see anything that radical?
Those aren't radical approaches. A true flat tax might be something that would work. We'll never get it through the Democrats back there. But it would be a very good approach. You know, if you're going to have good tax code, it's going to have to have simplicity. It's going to have relevance. It's going to have a whole raft of other things that basically would make it worthwhile and something that people could stand and could live with.
Mm-hmm.
Getting there with all of the differing views in Congress is a very difficult thing to do, but I intend to get there, but it may take time. The 86 bill, for instance, took 3 solid years. And actually more than that, if you really counted it correctly. But 3 solid years from the time they really made an effort to try and do it. And there have been so many additions to that since 1986, you wouldn't even recognize the same code. We're looking at a cash flow approach where you can make your deductions right off the bat 100%. And it has some elements of a consumption tax as well. The problem with the consumption tax, which is often called a value-added tax or a VAT, is that it's so easy to increase taxes. We don't want to get in a position where that is the case, because as the Congress changes hands, you can count every time the Democrats get there, they want to increase taxes so that they can spend it. And the problem with increasing taxes is you usually get less revenues than you had projected. Because people then start changing their spending habits and their saving habits and everything else. And all of these tax increases that they have really don't work. What we do have to have is budget neutrality, revenue neutrality. And that's something to work for as we try to make the system work. It's a very complex situation, but I intend to do something about it.
Senator, yesterday, because of the BYU bowl game, that's a topic for another day.
I was watching.
Yeah.
I just got there at the end, and I was very disappointed.
But yesterday, there wasn't much of a Doug Wright show, so we aired the game. But I got a phone call in the afternoon, and a colleague said, "Have you read Politico?" And I went, "No, should I be?" And they go, "Oh, yes." And so I looked it up, and I was reading through some of the perhaps challenges that are ahead for our junior senator here in the state of Utah as he runs for reelection. And it was pretty garden variety at first. You know, some are a little concerned about some of the harder line positions. And I'm reading along, and I see that there are those who might step up, including Thomas Wright, who might run against him, that Scott Anderson, of course, you know, at Zions Bank, has been looking to see whether there are some other folks that could be interested. And I'm going, okay, and I'm almost to the end of page 2, and then I see this from a highly respected Utahn in every capacity imaginable, including business and community and philanthropy, medicine, yeah, and even the LDS Church. And he said, this is John Huntsman Sr., "All I can say is Mike Lee is an embarrassment to the state of Utah." He went on to say, "He's been a tremendous embarrassment to our family, to our state, to our country, to have him as a U.S. senator." And then Mr. Huntsman said, "He's tried to come and see me several times. I have no interest whatsoever in chatting with him." Senator, what is your reaction? This is a fellow colleague back in Washington.
Well, as you know, John Huntsman Sr., and I think John Huntsman Jr., they're people of very strong feelings. And one reason both of them have risen to such heights in our country is because they put those strong feelings into action. Frankly, that was unexpected by me. I'm very close to John Huntsman Sr. I've helped up there an awful lot over the years and intend to continue to do so. That's the most generous family. I mean, it's one of the most generous families. We have some others that aren't even known to be as generous as they really are because they're not as public. But all I can say is that John Sr. is a person of great dimension. He's a terrific human being. He's somebody I really, really admire. I admire our former governor, John. He's really not a junior, I don't think, but he's gone a long way and taken on some very tough things. I would have preferred to not have that, because Mike he's a good person, and he's trying to do his job based upon his own feelings and his own ideas. He got elected with the great help of the Tea Party, which could be a very good part of our base over time, and I think gradually we made strides in this last election. But you can't be devoted to just one strain of the Republican Party without making sure that you represent everybody. And I think that's where some of this resentment comes. But Mike's he's a bright young man. He works hard back there. I have great feelings for him. Naturally, I was very close to his father and help get him there as a Solicitor General of the United States. It wasn't easy. Kennedy came to me and said, "We're going to kill him." I said, "No, you're not." He said, "Yes, we are." I said, "No, you're not." I said, "He's going to go through." I said, "You can have some votes against him if you want to, but he's going through." I said, "You'll like him after he gets there." Well, Kennedy backed off for me, and he went through, and with a significant number of votes against him. Later, Kennedy came to me, and he said, "Warren," he said, "you know, he's pretty good." I said, "I told you he'd be good." He said, I think you were right." And that's one reason why I could get him to do almost anything, because he knew that I didn't play politics with these things, and that I would give him a straight scoop. And when it was truly possible to compromise in reasonable ways, we'd get it done. But I have to say that John Huntsman Sr. is a person of great dimension. He's a valued leader. He has done so much for our state that alarms me to have him feel the way he does.
I've got a break for our news here, Senator.
Can I say one other thing, though?
Sure.
In the case of Mr. Anderson, who's one of the most wonderful people in this state,
yeah.
Scott is one of the great leaders of this state, one of the great business leaders of this state, president of Zions Bank. He's one of my dearest friends. Naturally, many in the banking community were very upset when Bob Bennett was taken out the way he was taken out, and that still hasn't been healed. But Scott Anderson's as good a man as you'll find, and so is John Huntsman Sr.
One really quick question here, and then I've got to jump to our news, and I hope you can stay with us one more break.
Sure.
This left the impression, this being the Politico article I've referred to, Hatch, who said he probably will back Lee, said it's a little too early to make judgments on whether his junior colleague will have a serious fight on his hands. Before I do go to our news, and this really has to be brief, are you going to support Senator Lee?
Well, you know, I don't think we're at that point where we have to talk about things like that. I do support him in the Senate. He's on the Judiciary Committee with me. It's pretty well known that he had to have a waiver to get on that committee, and I was part of making sure he had a waiver because that's where his expertise is, and did that for him as a colleague. And he's doing a good job there. So, I don't want to get involved in some election that hasn't even started yet.
The most trusted and connected man in Utah.
Senator Orrin Hatch joining us.
Glad to be with you, Doug.
Doug Wright.
While the Democrats were able to block Keystone in the Senate, I think the Republicans will have every opportunity to bring it up again next year.
The Doug Wright Show on KSL News Radio, 102.7 FM and 1160 AM.
Thought we'd dust off that promo, Senator. I always like to hear that, and I appreciate your willingness to join us here on this show. We've had a lot of great, frank conversations over the years, and it's always beneficial. As a matter of fact, we got a phone call just a moment ago from a former Utah State Senator and Tax Commission, head of the Tax Commission in the state of Utah. Senator John Valentine is on the line and said, "May I ask a question of Senator Hatch?" And John, you're on KSL. Thanks for joining us.
Hi, John. How are you?
Doug. Hey, how are you doing, Senator Hatch?
Doing great.
You have a very, very pivotal role in tax policy as the incoming chair of the Senate Finance Committee. And, boy, we are just so glad you're there.
Well, thank you.
But we have a question, though, and that is dealing with the Marketplace Fairness Act.
Right.
We've been trying for 15 years to try to resolve the Quill case and the way that to collect sales tax on remote sales, including Internet sales. It's already due. It's already a use tax. But, boy, we sure could use the help to try to see if we can get either Jason Chaffetz's bill through or something similar to that. What's going on with that particular issue, Senator?
Well, it's constantly bollocked up in the Senate, and I think in the House as well. And we'll just have to see what can happen. But we thought we might have had it taken care of in this last Congress, but it got all bollocked up again. There are two very vociferous sides on that issue, and as you know, it's hard for the states to not to have that continue in the current posture because it's not good for our local businesses who have to collect taxes vis-a-vis online purchases and so forth. So I wish I had a better report for you, but so far it hasn't been something that could be easily passed.
John, every time we talk about this, because we have so many major online retailers, everything from eBay to Overstock.com,
right.
And Jonathan Johnson is a friend of mine, and quite often we'll have him on. And last time we chatted with the various parties involved, I think it was Senator Bramble who joined us and said, and also Mayor Becker, who indicated that they were very close to accord with some of our online retailers like Jonathan Johnson. Jonathan did call in and say, yes, indeed, we've been discussing things. Things are getting closer, but he said we still have some issues. Has that, to your knowledge, been ironed out? And I'll ask both of you, Senator Hatch first.
Well, let me just say that I'm aware of that, and I think Senator Bramble's done a terrific job of trying to bring people together on that. And Jonathan Johnson and others are working to try and resolve this problem in a way that's satisfactory. And I think they've come quite a ways. I just hope that we can get the matter resolved one way or the other. Like I say, there are two sides to it. It's it's very, very difficult for every member of Congress to resolve that problem. But it has to be resolved. And we'll see what we can do to get it done.
But when we hear that $200 million at least for the state of Utah, and Ralph Becker indicated a rather sizable chunk of change for the capital city was being left on the table out there, John, it sounds like this is an issue that really does need to be dealt with.
Yeah, it really does. In fact, the sticking point is the way you determine the tax. It's called
That's right.
sourcing.
That's right.
It's whether or not the sourcing is done at the state where it is being shipped from or whether it's the state that's being shipped to. Being shipped from is going to end up with a lot of fraud and a lot of cheating. Being shipped to, we cut that all out. And so we are really pushing hard to say, let's resolve the problem by saying you pay the sales tax on the state that you ship it to.
John, I certainly appreciate your phone call. I wish you and your great family a very, very happy holiday season, and thanks for calling in.
I do also,
and thank
John.
Thank you so much for taking the call. And thank you, Senator.
Merry Christmas. Keep up the great work. You're one of our best people.
John Valentine joining us with a question for Senator Hatch. And, Senator, I'm not sure what your time frame is.
I'm fine.
Are you okay for a few more minutes? Then why don't we take a break here, and when we come back, maybe we can just quickly touch on North Korea. We can talk about some of the other issues that are going on right now, also the expansion of the Utah Test and Training Range. That and more coming up with Senator Orrin Hatch, all here at KSL News Radio. I've asked Senator Hatch if he could stay just to quickly touch on a couple of other issues. The situation with North Korea, Senator, as you look at this, and who knows what's really going on with all of the hacking and things of that nature, but the huff, puff, and bluster that I hear coming out of North Korea not only is frightening, but it is... I think one of the reasons it's so frightening to me is it's so ridiculous. You just wonder if it is just totally delusional within their leadership over there.
Well, they are delusional. And I have to say that we can't allow that to happen. Cybersecurity is something we're not very well prepared for. I was 18 years on the Senate Intelligence Committee, and we were talking cybersecurity way back when. And we're not prepared for it. And I have to say the president's tepid response to that was pretty pathetic. Now, it's true it was a movie company not interfering with our power systems or other ways, but it just shows what they could do if we don't get on top of these things and protect our country. So we're going to have to do it, but I can't say they're moving ahead very fast, either in Congress or in the administration right now.
Well, fortunately, this movie was we're probably not going to be diminished by not being able to see it. But you think of some of the things, the political statements that have been made in movies, documentaries that have been made, things of that nature over the years, going clear back to Charlie Chaplin's The Great Dictator, to some of the documentaries, Finding Comedy in the Muslim World, which was a real interesting statement. And you go, are we really going to allow a backwater tin horn dictatorship to basically limit our freedom of speech, expression, artistic expression, and even political satire?
Well, it gives you some indication when an inferior country like that, that really doesn't have the capacities that others have, can do something like that. Can you imagine what China could do? Could you imagine what the Russians could do? I mean, we have got to be better prepared, and that's why I am really down on these people who want to knock the NSA out of business. My gosh, if we don't have that, we don't have anything. And I've got to tell you, we've got to come up with cybersecurity in this country and do it from scratch. There's some being done, but not anywhere near where it should be.
Very quickly, too, on Cuba. You know, I'm tainted because I would love to visit Cuba. I there's something about the island. I've steamed past it on a cruise, and I've always thought, wouldn't it be wonderful to be able to visit Cuba? I realize, you know, the diabolical administration. I recognize that the Batista administration before that was no, you know, cupcake either. Right. But has the United States taken the right step, Senator?
Well, I don't want to go down there and get you out of jail down there in Cuba, but let me just
I'd be counting on you, by the way.
Yeah, I would do it, too. But let me just say that I don't think so. I mean, I really believe you don't reward dictators like Fidel and Raul Castro, who still have violated all kinds of human rights in that state. Yeah, they live like kings. The rest of the people live like paupers. And frankly, I think it's the wrong thing. We had them on the ropes. Even Russia wasn't able to help them. Now they can't get the help from Venezuela. And what we're going to do is pull them right off the ropes and give them advantages that they should not have. Now, the people in Cuba, I think they just pray for us to do the right thing with regard to Cuba. On the other hand, I can see why this type of president, with his very liberal tendencies, thinks that by being nice to them, they're going to change their ways. I haven't seen any way they're going to change their ways. But some very top-notch people, like my friend Jeff Flake from Arizona, feel otherwise. And so I have an open mind on it, but I think it's a mistake.
The thing that's been so frustrating for me, I look at the people that we have reached out, and you know, just prior to you being in the Senate, Richard Nixon reached out to what we thought was a pretty nasty regime, several of them.
Right.
And you look at how it changed the world, and I just look at the last 50 years, the better part of my life. I was just a little kid when these policies went into place, and you know, they say the definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over again without getting the results that you want.
But insanity also involves making terrible mistakes that lead to even more oppression.
Yeah.
And we have to – sometimes you just have to take these people on and let them know that oppression is not acceptable to the United States of America. On the other hand, I can see where it might work. When they get a taste of what it would be like to have people coming in and out, that might lead to a breakdown of the Castros in and of itself. But they're tough. They're mean. They're not going to break down, I don't think.
Senator, I have kept you longer than we had promised. Thank you so much for joining us here at KSL. There are always so many things we love to chat with you about. I hope that you and your great family and your great staff, some of whom are here and they're so helpful to us here at KSL and on this show, I wish you the very, very happiest of Christmases. And
well,
thanks
likewise
for all you do.
To you and your family and to all here at KSL and to everybody in our state and country. This is a wonderful time of the year, and I hope we all treat it the way it should be treated.
Well, absolutely. Senator Orrin Hatch with us here at KSL News Radio.